Support for WMFE comes from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University's worldwide campus, where highly ranked online degree programs offer the flexibility to learn what students want from wherever they are. More at erau.edu/worldwide.
But I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Hello and welcome into Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. Well, you've heard of lifespan and health span, but how about joy span? Coming up, a woman who knows more about aging than just about anyone, and she's here to tell us how to experience joy no matter our challenges. And you'll meet a man with no pulse. His heart doesn't beat, but that hasn't kept him from winning a silver medal in the National Senior Games playing pickleball while wearing 7 pounds of batteries and a computer. This is Growing Bolder. Well, you don't need me to tell you that there is a growing fascination with longevity these days. In fact, billions of investment dollars are flowing into novel genetic therapies, designer drug cocktails, chemotherapeutics, cellular reprogramming, and more. There are those who actually say that for every day that we manage to stay alive now, we actually gain an additional 5 hours of life expectancy. And that is not necessarily good news, because what they're not telling us is that you'll actually enjoy those 5 hours. There is a growing disconnect now between lifespan, how long we might live, and health span, how well we actually live. And this, in fact, is becoming the fundamental challenge of modern aging. It's the longevity paradox. Advances in science and medicine and technology will unquestionably give us longer lives, but more people surviving into very old age will also mean that more people are living with frailty and chronic illness and dementia for decades, potentially. Growing Bolder has interviewed more active, happy, and healthy 90 and 100-year-olds than any media company in the world. Prove me wrong. The good news for all of us is that this is an increasingly diverse group, diverse in every way. Men and women, more women than men, but that's gradually changing. Urban, rural, rich, poor, black, white, brown. Their quality of life wasn't something they were able to purchase. It wasn't given to them through some sort of scientific or medical intervention. And it wasn't simply a genetic blessing, because genes account for just about 20% of how we age. The other 80% is determined by the daily lifestyle choices that we make. And that means that happy, healthy, active longevity is a very real possibility for any of us. There's two important points to make here, however. One, despite what I've just said, there are no guarantees. Bad things can and do happen to good people. And two, aging is not easy. The happy, healthy, active, purposeful older adults that we've met all struggle at times, but somehow they have found a way to keep on keeping on, to continue extracting moments of joy from their daily lives despite their struggles. As 96-year-old Marianne Cooper once told us, "I'm always looking for life's little miracles, not the big things, the happy little things that are the most wonderful part of life." Or as 105-year-old Julia Hawkins told us, "When you get older, you should have magic moments. Older people need something to look forward to be ready for, to care about. And I do care about a lot of things. I care about flowers and birds and sunrises and sunsets." You can watch, by the way, both of those videos on Growing Bolder's YouTube page. And I'm sharing all of this today to help explain why I'm anxious to speak to someone who I believe is a kindred spirit. Now, I've never met Dr. Carrie Burnite, but I know of her work, and like those of us at Growing Bolder, she's on a mission to help everyone of every age view aging as a blessing to be celebrated and not simply something to fear and regret, to actually look at aging through a lens of passion and purpose and possibility, and not simply loss and limitation like our culture wants us to do. Dr. Burnite was a professor of geriatric medicine for nearly 2 decades. She's been featured in the New York Times, CBS, on Oprah, CNN, Forbes Health, and more. She's called America's gerontologist, and if she is where we're headed in gerontology, we are on a promising trajectory. What really caught our attention, though, is her new book. It's called Joy Span, The Art and Science of Thriving in Life's Second Half, because we built Growing Bolder on the foundation of one belief, that it's possible for all of us to experience moments of joy no matter our age or challenges. So let's get with it. Dr. Kerry Burnight, welcome. How are you doing today?
Well, what a beautiful introduction. And we are kindred spirits. And I am a follower of Growing Boulder and am inspired by the pioneering work. So I'm just delighted to be here today.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. And I obviously want to get to joy span in just a few minutes. But if it's okay, let's talk about gerontology for just a second, because you are a gerontologist who taught geriatric medicine, I'm assuming to medical students. And despite the age wave that is rolling over America today, you read that, I mean, I know 10,000 of us are turning 65 every day, but you read that there is still a significant shortage of geriatricians and that the majority of medical schools don't even require a geriatric rotation. How big of a problem is this, and what role can gerontologists like you, and when I say that, I mean someone who is smart and holistic and optimistic about aging, play in helping resolve that problem?
I love that question, because just disentangling what we mean by geriatric medicine and gerontology. So when your children are young, we take them to a physician, an MD, a pediatrician, who has additional training in issues pertaining to younger people. So similarly, a geriatrician is somebody who has additional training beyond internal medicine or general medicine in order to understand this phase of life. So with so many people turning 65 every single day, we should have more and more geriatricians, medical doctors, and we don't. We have fewer and fewer and fewer. So I'm a gerontologist. So my PhD is in the study of aging. So it is, yes, the biology and physiology, but also the psychology, the economics, the policy issues. And I worked within a department that was, everyone else was geriatricians, and they're the greatest people, greatest physicians, but the funding isn't there. It isn't paid as well as specialty. So one of the hopes that we're trying to, in addition to encouraging young people about how great it is to be in geriatric medicine and to study gerontology, we're also trying to work systematically to incorporate geriatric and gerontological knowledge and research into the curriculum of every physician, because every physician is seeing more older adults. So it's both. We're not giving up on geriatric medicine because it's the gold standard, in my opinion, but we're also putting that curriculum into oncology, gastroenterology, and the like.
Great explanation. Thank you for that. And you know, I think all of this issue, if you will, is compounded by the fact that older adults are changing rapidly. I mean, the boundaries of possibility as we age are changing. This is what Growing Boulder does. We don't have your medical expertise, but what we do have is firsthand knowledge of older adults doing things that our culture told us they couldn't do, bouncing back from things that our culture told us we can't bounce back from. So hopefully this message, through the work that you're doing and the work that we're doing, gets through to the MDs, the geriatricians, if you will. Let me ask you this, Dr. Kerry, because it's fascinating. You came by your interest in aging naturally. Your parents, I understand, were older than the norm, especially back then. So you had a front row seat to older adults from the get-go. How did that impact what you do today?
Yeah, so my parents had two high schoolers. They were done having kids. They were looking to the horizon. My mom started not feeling very well, decided herself that it was menopause in her 40s, and went into the doctor, who said, "Congratulations, you're having another baby." So they both, my mom and dad, did a good bit of crying about it. And my dad was entirely gray when I was born. So when people would say things that older people can't do this or that, I would look at my dad, who could do everything. And I was this little tiny sort of gerontologist, or a person who didn't see it the way. And so from there, I feel like it's been the most interesting. I get every day to learn from people, just as you do at Growing Boulder, learn from people who are ahead of us. And there are so many things that get better as you get older. And once we own those things and understand those things, it really changes the way that we see an aging society, not as a burden, but as a real opportunity.
You know, it's funny. Coincidentally, we're taping a show tomorrow. And as I was sitting here waiting for you to arrive, I was continuing to work. And I'm basically inserting into this show an interview that we did with Dr. Gene Cohen back in 2009. I feel this. I'm just revisiting that. And, you know, this is a guy who, you know, in all the photographs, not all of them, but many of them, you know, he's standing there holding an umbrella, you know, as a metaphor for sky above clouds. You know, the fact that, you know, there are these clouds over aging, but there is this sky above us that has so much wonderful opportunity. Are you the lone voice out there in the field of gerontology? How unique are you? Because I don't see a lot of it.
Well, I love that you bring up Gene Cohn, and I can't wait to tune into that because he, you know, he wrote a book called The Mature Mind and The Creative Age that absolutely, so no, I am not alone. We are all standing on one another's shoulders about saying this, it isn't new, nor is it really revolutionary, but we've forgotten the value of older adults. And what we need to do is we need to remember. We need to remember what societies were like, who were not buying into this fear-based, older is bad, everything is all decline lie. And it is a lie. It is so lucrative to tell us that, oh gosh, you mustn't look older, or you can't do this technology, or you can't be funny or appreciated or cool or hip. And so like my mom is 96 and she is so much cooler than I am. And she's not alone. There are millions of people who have stepped into the older versions of themselves. So no, I'm not alone as a gerontologist or a geriatrician, and older adults are leading the way, but we need your work and the work of all of us coming together and kind of linking arms together and going in the same direction in the same way that we did. You know, there was a time not very long ago where women couldn't vote. And we were filled all these lies that somehow we couldn't make leaders or we couldn't be in certain professions. And we look back and think, oh, how silly that is. And it is my hope that we're going to be able to look back and say, oh my gosh, we are so done with anti-aging. That's not the way of the future. The way of the future is pro-aging and how to step into it.
Yeah, we really are living in a unique time with an awesome responsibility and opportunity, because I think what we're trying to do is change the culture of aging, selfishly for ourselves, but not just for ourselves, but for our kids and our grandkids and forever. I mean, we do have that opportunity. And I'm glad, Dr. Carey, that you mentioned your mom, Betty, because your social media, if not your book, and perhaps even your vision of aging, has to some extent been inspired by Betty. What's it like hanging out with her?
So my mom, I can tell you, she was never particularly athletic. She enjoyed dessert and an occasional cocktail. She'd have a bourbon or a scotch. She didn't have this great attitude. She wasn't always like, but what I can say is that as a gerontologist, as I would read these really rigorous longitudinal research studies and I would learn about something, I would share it with my mom. And I would say, oh my gosh, mom, did you know that, for example, what you think about aging impacts how long you live and even impacts your health in terms of inflammation and antiviral load? And she would say, no, I did not know that. And I say, well, let's think about. So for the past probably 20 years, she's been making these small choices And these small choices add up. And so she has gone from a time where she would say, if she were here, she would say, yeah, I complained a lot. I lamented getting older. And when she realized how damaging that was to her and how self-limiting that was to have that internalized ageism stop you from doing things, like she stopped doing it. And she's truly the best version of herself is age 96. Better than 86, better than 76, so very much better than 36. And so, yeah, I'm really inspired by her. And I know that the daily choices that we all get to make today, tens of thousands of choices, are what is going to add up to what our experience of longevity is going to look like. And it matters because, as you said, we're not saying that aging isn't hard. We know the end, right? You know, with my undergraduates, I always start out with the mortality rate. Students, do you know what the mortality rate is? And I put a sign behind me and it's just a great big all the way filled in red circle. It's 100%. And because we have limited time here, how we use that time matters. And when tough things come, I didn't say if, when tough things come, a diagnosis that hits you upside the head, which will come, and losing loved ones, which will happen, and changes in mobility and vision and these things. When those things come, how we fortify ourselves and how we address those changes, that right there, that's what makes the quality of your life.
Wow. I could respond to 20 things you just said, but the first thing I want to respond to is the longitudinal study that you've got going on in your house right now with Betty. I mean, that's going to be amazing. You know, secondly, we've interviewed so many, like I said, 90 and 100-year-olds. We interviewed, is it Carl Reiner or Rob Reiner? Which was the older one? I get it mixed up. Carl Reiner. Carl Reiner, interviewed him, you know, when he was in his 90s and hanging out with Mel Brooks all the time. And he said the 90s have been the most productive, enjoyable decade of my life. And I can't tell you the number of 90-year-olds we talk to that say that. And admittedly, we're only reaching out and finding those that are still, you know, extracting joy from their lives. The book's coming up, folks. But I think if we can, you know, get through the challenges of our 70s and 80s and make it to our 90s in relatively good health, it does seem like these nonagenarians are having a good time.
Yeah. And even if we don't enjoy such great health or perfection. So, you know, my mom, she has congestive heart failure and she's had both hips replaced and she has full body arthritis and she had her hip done and scoliosis. And then she went through bankruptcy and then my brother got leukemia. But that's not unusual, right? That's called living. I mean, what we're after is at every age and stage with the stuff that comes with life. And the whole reason actually I got into this is that I started out my career working with people who had endured the most suffering. So people who had physical elder abuse, neglect, financial exploitation, self-neglect, people hunched over in wheelchairs alone. And it was all day, every day, I would cry on my way home from work. And I was thinking to myself, how can we get earlier up the stream in order to prevent this? And so then the two ways are systemically, our society, our policies, our what we have in place in terms of enabling people to age in health and in dignity matters, but also the individual. It's not all individual, but there is an individual role for both of us. So like, what can we do to fortify ourselves? And we talk about it all the time with our physical bodies. So all day, every day, we know cardiovascular health, strength training, flexibility, and agility. Do a little bit of those every day. It doesn't look like much just that day, but if you keep doing that, you're going to fortify your body for this long 100-year life. So the same analogy can be true for our internal strength, also called our emotional well-being or our psychological well-being. And that is fortifying ourselves with little choices and little research-based ways of navigating long lives that are going to make you be okay anyway. So the book was going to be called Joy Anyway, which that's still how I think of it, which is not because it's easy or perfect, but because the alternative is this: double your suffering. You have the hard thing and then you just nosedive into it and then spend the rest of your life suffering, which a lot of people do, or have the hard thing, have resources so that you can find joy anyway.
What can we do to fortify ourselves physically, psychologically, and emotionally to navigate a 100-year life with joy? We'll continue our conversation with America's gerontologist, Dr. Carrie Burnite, when we return. This is Growing Bolder.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. We're talking today with Dr. Carrie Burnite, author of Joy Span. You know, one of the keys that we found in our Growing Bolder stories on centenarians who are still enjoying their life is the ability to not just endure loss, but to adapt to the challenges of aging and still experience joy in their daily lives. Dr. Burnite's new book is called Joy Span. So what is that and how is it different from lifespan and health span?
It's important to start with a definition because joy is used in a lot of different ways. So I like to start with kind of grounding ourselves in what the heck we're talking about. So when I was looking at the research, there are thousands of studies on psychological well-being, like what predicts a person of having well-being. And so in the beginning, I thought, well, maybe I could call it well-span. Or well-being span. But my patients were hearing me say wealth span, like the financial part, which is an important part that other people have researched, but it wasn't what I was saying. So when I looked, the American Psychological Association defines joy as well-being and life satisfaction. And that, I thought, is something that we could pursue. So it is differentiated from happiness because happiness, as defined, there's a terrific book, The Book of Joy, that was the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. And they're having a conversation and they talk about how are joy and happiness different? And what they say is that happiness is often outside in, it's often externally dependent, and therefore it's pretty up and down. Whereas joy, as they defined it, and many traditions define it as more of an inside out. And so it is more akin to contentment than it is ecstasy. And you can't always tell if somebody, like what their joy is like. I have like one person I know who's looking out the window and really suffering. And I have another person, same in their 90s, looking out the window, feeling such joy looking at the miracle of a tree. So we don't always know. It comes from the inside, and I called it Joy Span in order to try to capture quality of life as opposed to just length of life or even health, because it does concern me when people say to me, I'll be enjoying my life as long as I'm healthy. And I look at them and I see the 50-year-old version now who is talking, but I, as a gerontologist, also see the 95-year-old version. What I want to impart is joy is possible even with health that is less than perfect, even when we lose our partner, even when things go a different way than they thought they were going to go. And that makes me really excited to think, wow, that's where I want to invest my time, is into something that I can hold on to even as things change around me.
And I want to add one thing to your list. And even joy is possible, even for those in fairly advanced stages of dementia. Because they're able to live in the moment. They're able to feel and experience love and joy. And, you know, our culture has tended to give up on this kind of stuff. I love every little bit of that. So how do we get it? I mean, I don't know anybody's going to argue with the fact that, you know, as we get older, it is our capacity to recognize and experience joy that's where the game is played. That's the difference between, enjoying your life at 90 and 100 and whatever and not. So how do we get there? How can we learn to experience joy?
I love that question. And what people want to push back with, and I like when they do, is they say, they think, oh, easy for you to say. And then they'll point to the things in their lives that aren't right. And I think it's important that so that we steer clear of toxic positivity, which I think is really dangerous and unhealthy. So I think like the first step is just recognizing when hard things come our way, there is grief and there is a recognition that, wow, I have, for example, traveled 70 years with my life partner. They've passed away. This is really different for me, eating dinner by myself, for example. So that's the first point. The second point is, thank heaven that researchers from all over the world have posed your exact question. And they have conducted studies asking the question, how do you access joy? How do you access well-being or life satisfaction? Why does one person seem like, wow, they're thriving and enjoying this 100-year life, and another person thinking, this looks like the worst thing ever? So what the research, from thousands of studies, there were also thousands of variables. And so it's a problem because you can't do 1,000 things. But when you get into the literature, you find, as things do, that they group into areas that are proven strategies. And the proven strategies, I use verbs to summarize those because I wanted to emphasize that they actually take work. And so I think, as you brought up in the introduction, genetics is less than 20%. So there's room for action. So there are four things that they group into. And if I would have had things my way, I would have had this lovely, snappy acronym that I could use. But I ultimately just needed to use the words that the research showed. So I'm going to say the four of them. It starts with a G and ends with a G. So that's something. And in the middle is CA. I'm from California, helpful for me, maybe helpful for anyone, I don't know. But the four verbs shown to not only correlate, but have found to show causation for joy are grow, connect, adapt, and give. And within those four small, seemingly obvious words, that's where all the research is grouped. So if we just take one, for example, grow. Humans are designed to continue to grow, to continue to do hard things, to continue to step out of their comfort zone, to continue to explore areas of curiosity. And yet, the societal norm that is we have put on ourselves and have been put on us is, it's too late. You can't do that. What makes you think you could do that? And so we're at odds. So in the same way that we say to children, okay, get up on the diving board and jump in. Now learn long division. Okay, put your cleats on. You're going to learn this brand new game. That's good for our brain. It's good for our self-efficacy. It's good for predicting joy and well-being. So a daily step would be to think about, am I growing in some area? Like, am I doing something right now that is pushing me out of my comfort zone? And if you're not, not to worry. Step one is just going, okay, no, I'm not. I'm not doing anything right now that's growing. And then deciding to do the work that it takes to dig into what you're curious about. And when you find what you're curious about, and in the book, for example, I put, I think, about 100 options that you could go through a checklist, but there will be other people who are interested in that same topic. And worst case, if you couldn't find anybody interested in that or having that same societal goal maybe that you wanted, you can then be the one to create it. And I'll give you a quick example, which is I have a patient who is now 89, and she was very interested in how much waste is. She grew up in, you know, a depression era, and she couldn't believe how much waste there is of people throwing away food. And so she, when she identified this passion, she reached out through something on the computer called Meetup and met up with people who are different ages and stages and became a real leader in that movement. And from there, she has taken on like her own group that she has cultivated, all with that spark of curiosity and recognition that continued growth matters.
That's Dr. Carrie Burnight with 4 proven strategies to access joy in our lives, no matter our age or our challenges. When we return, we'll wrap up our conversation with Dr. Burnight, and you'll meet the man with no pulse who is all heart. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
Folks, we're speaking with Dr. Carrie Burnight. She is the author of a new book called Joy Span, The Art and Science of Thriving in Life's Second Half. And, you know, it's all great stuff. You know, one of the things I have come to believe, Dr. Carrie, and I'm wondering where it fits into your 4 pillars, growth, connect, adapt, and give. And that is, you know, for lack of a better word, it's mindset. You know, because I see what you think. You know, I always have this disclaimer. There are no guarantees. I'm going to tell you what's possible. This is not toxic positivity. I'm not just going to tell you what's possible. I'm going to show you what's possible through the example of someone that you should be able to relate to. Someone like you who is doing something you didn't think you could do or never imagined doing. That said, there are no guarantees. Bad things happen to good people. I guess I've become more of a tough love guy than you, because it does get to be frustrating. There are many people I've come to believe who don't want to know that more is possible. I think some people have come to find comfort in the cage that confines them, you know, the belief that it is too late, and to tell them when it is. And just read this book, folks. All you have to do to have a better life is to figure out how you can learn to experience joy. So I guess all this rambling is to get to the question, how important is mindset? Because to me, if you don't have some belief that any of these things will work, if you don't have belief that connecting is going to have value, if you don't have belief that growing and trying something new, if you don't have you know, the right mindset, the impact's not going to be nearly as much. So how important is our mindset in all of this?
Well, I could not agree more with all of what you're saying, especially the tough love part of it. And so I think sometimes people look at somebody, for example, who is fit or strong, and they'll think, oh, they're just so lucky. And you think, well, that person also puts in time every day toward those goals. So I think, you know, saying that's just lucky isn't probably the most accurate. And I think it's giving ourselves a cop out. So I think tough love on ourselves and others is an okay place to be. And I think mindset is incredibly important. So the predominant mindset right now that most, I would argue, people have is what I call the decline aging mindset. It has the terrific acronym of DAM. So with this DAM mindset, everything is getting worse. I'm less relevant, less creative, less attractive, everything down. And again, if you look to the research, if you look to the lived experience of millions of people, it simply isn't true that everything declines. So when you think about the things that get better when you get older, and not caring as much what people think, very liberating, greater emotional stability, a lot off my shoulders as one who used to be so up and down, the greater humility, the fact that as a society, in fact, as a world, that if we were to step into and own this greater humility, this greater, not me, 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 but like a selflessness that can come with being older, it would solve a lot of our problems. But if you don't get out of that mindset, out of that brainwashing that age is the synonymous with bad, you're never going to step into it. And that is a choice. So I think we need to put our own air mask on first, which is I can't control how even my husband or my sister or best friend is going to do their aging journey, but I sure as heck can have the tough love on myself. And so when people say, who is this book for? I did it intentionally. So each person who is aging, i.e. everyone, we are all aging, can take it upon themselves to say, I'm going to start with my own aging. Because when we other people, like older people are somehow, this is a book for older people. That makes no sense. It's just, you happen to catch me on this day at 56. You could have easily caught me at 26. And I would love to, if you could catch me at 106. We're all aging. So there isn't that us and them kind of thing. And so start with yourself. Start with your own aging and your own trajectory of how to maximize this one precious life. People then, because of the work that you do, look to see that it's possible. They'll see it in you, and that is something. But I don't think you can shake anyone into it necessarily. And so sometimes I have people with their arms crossed and saying, aging sucks. I hate it. I hate everything about it. So then instead of giving them my Joy Spam book, I just give them Mel Robbins' Let Them book. And I think, okay, let them. You can choose to suffer. I'm not going to be able to, you know, make everybody enjoy their lives. And if you want to suffer, you can. That's your choice. But it doesn't look very great to me having watched suffering up close for 20 years.
All of those are great points. And folks, I just want to reemphasize what Dr. Carey said about her book. Don't disregard this book if you think it's for older people. You know, it is for everyone. And this is one of the things, Doctor, that frustrates me more than anything else. And I know that senior service providers are overwhelmed. You know, we've got this onslaught, this freight train of frail elderly that's coming at us out of control. And they can't keep up with it. They're trying. They're underfunded. They're understaffed. And I just think that, you know, people that are in this space, if we really want to change things, if we really want to change the future, we got to back out and we've got to start changing the mindset, the daily lifestyle practices of people in their 30s and 40s and 50s. We got to prehabilitate them and get them ready for all of this kind of stuff. And that's what this book, this book, in truth, could have more value to a 30-year-old than it does to an 80-year-old. Because as you note, many 80-year-olds are just going to disregard it. And you know, as you said that, I'm going to drop another name from your world. We had a live show a while ago that was on PBS, and we brought a bunch of people together, and one of them was Dr. Bill Thomas.
Yes.
You know, the guy who pretty much deinstitutionalized nursing homes, and he's on our stage here. We did it at the Villages in Florida, the world's largest retirement community, and he got up there, and it's one of my favorite quotes, and I use it all the time, and he said that he's learned this from older adults. He said, I've paid attention. I've listened to you people, and you've taught me one important thing, and that is that people think that aging is a problem. Aging is not a problem. It's a process that allows us to let go of that which matters least so that we can focus on that which matters most. And then as I've continued to talk to people, and as I know that you know, so forgive me, I'm not trying to tell you anything you don't know. You've known this long before I did. The things that matter most have nothing to do with age. It's kindness and passion and compassion and resilience and creativity and curiosity and wisdom and patience and gratitude. You know, these are things we can all continue to develop until the very end. And it's just so easy to say, yeah, I can't throw a fastball like I did in high school, and I'm never going to be homecoming queen. But, you know, look at what you can do. Look at the skills that you can, continue to develop. And, and I think Joy Span is an incredible book that can help all of us do that. So thank you for writing it.
Well, thank you for that's exactly right. And as a gerontologist, you go to a lot of funerals, and I love them, and I go to a lot. And nobody ever says, oh, they were so rich, and their skin was so tight, and my God, could they throw a ball fast? It is exactly the characteristics that you just listed. Those are the things that matter, and those are your legacy. So when you think about, like, why invest in your own joy, it's because you'll enjoy it, but also you're leaving a legacy to those who come after you so that we can stop this fear-based shutting down of humans and instead go, huh, but I don't think it's going to come from 20-year-olds one day waking up and going, aha. It has to come from experienced people who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 100s, looking back to people who follow them and say, look at this, guys. I am a better listener than I've ever been. And that is super cool and super important. And I bring up listening because I was just in a skilled nursing facility recently. And this woman was such a gifted listener that even though she was now nonverbal, her mind was still sharp, her eyes were so bright, and I just couldn't get enough of her because I felt so heard. And when I walked away, I thought, listening is something that we could give our whole life. And so even if someday I can't blah, blah, that might be a good thing because I could finally shut up and learn to really listen to other humans.
Well, I feel like we could continue to talk, through dinner, and
I'd like it. I'm coming wherever you are. I'm coming to you.
we got to figure out a way to continue the conversation because I suspected we were kindred spirits. I know it now. I think Dr. Carey, you are a gift to the culture of aging. People need to read your book. They need to hear you speak. And folks, it is called Joy Span: The Art and Science of Thriving in Life's Second Half. Available wherever you get your books. Pick it up. Don't just read it. Let it have an impact on your life. Dr. Carey, thanks so much. And let's do figure out a way to keep on keeping on.
Anything growing bolder, my answer is yes. So thank you for your absolute leadership in this area. So I am at your service.
When we return, the 71-year-old man with no pulse competing in the National Senior Games while waiting and hoping for a heart transplant. This is Growing Bolder.
Embrace the health and longevity movement with the Fountain of Youth monthly e-newsletter. Growing Boulder and the National Senior Games Association have teamed up to bring you the latest videos, podcasts, and articles on inspirational masters athletes and the many benefits of physical activity delivered right to your inbox. Just go to nsga.com/connect to sign up for free today. The Fountain of Youth, because if you want to keep moving, you have to keep moving.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. A 71-year-old Ed Smith is the personification of Growing Bolder. We sought out Ed at the National Senior Games where he was competing in pickleball. Ed is 71 years old and a retired fire chief from Baton Rouge. He worked with the fire department for 47 years, getting a physical every year, including stress tests, and he never had a single issue or was diagnosed with a problem. But he had a total heart failure in 2018 and was fitted with an LVAD, a left ventricular assist device. Ed literally has no pulse. His heart doesn't beat. He wears 7 pounds of batteries, a mini computer, and a pump 24/7, even when playing pickleball in the National Senior Games.
Well, you see, I got, for pickleball, I wear them on my legs. There's two batteries here that I have to maintain, and then this is the computer that actually runs my heart. I do not have a pulse. I just have a thing, and then I have a, this is the cable. It's, I got an open hole right here in my belly, and the cable goes into there from the computer to the pump that's attached to my heart. And my heart catches the blood, and then the pump pumps it out, and I'm running off of 5,500 RPMs.
Most people are taken off of the transplant list after the age of 70, but they've kept Ed on it because he is so active. He is prehabilitating, so if he does get a heart, his chances of recovering and living many more years are greatly increased. And this is why we call prehabilitation a no-brainer, because we will all experience health setbacks as we age, and the types of interventions that are made available to us and the speed and extent of our recovery are largely determined by our overall health. By the way, prehabilitation is just another word for exercise, for physical and social activity. It's simply making positive lifestyle choices every day. It's growing bolder while you're growing older. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis, and our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming road, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. So much older than, I'm younger than that now. Half-right prejudice leap for, rip down all hate I scream. Lies that life is blind.
nation deep somehow. Oh, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Here the soldier stands, I aim my hand at the mongrel dogs who teach. Fearing not, I'd become my enemy in the instant that I preach. Sisters fled by confusion boats, mutiny from stern to bow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Deceived me into thinking I had something to protect. Good and bad, I defined these terms quite clear, no doubt, somehow. Ah, but I was so much older.